Cliff Schechter is kind enough to join us to start off our show today. The Unprecedented is the podcast. It's fantastic. Of course, he's on with Steph, Blue Am Strategies, and he's kind enough to join us today to talk about the crazy train that is Republicans. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
Doing well, sir. So how did you like CPAC in Dallas? Did they have ribs this year?
Well, I did not attend.
Okay.
Two places I don't want to be in the summer: CPAC and Dallas. But
it's like, is Tampa not available? Boy, you're trying to find the hottest place on the planet.
I know they couldn't go to Honduras. Well, we know they couldn't do that, of course, because there'd be people that were different. We wouldn't want that. I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, it almost feels like it's tough to come up with new things to say about them. You know, they are an insane. They've allowed themselves to be taken over by an insane fringe of conspiracy theorists and people who just say the stupidest things that, you know, even 20 years ago in the Republican Party would have led a lot of people to sort of speak out and say, "Are you serious?" But now are just sort of acceptable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Ben Carson standing up and saying that welfare was worse than slavery for Black Americans, which totally makes sense because he was on welfare, so he clearly did horrible things to him, like making him be a brain surgeon. Which, by the way, if you learn anything from Ben Carson, it's that you can be very good at one thing and be a complete moron at just about everything else. Because that dude had ever done surgery on my brain, I'd be looking back now and be like wondering what he left in there, like his car keys or, you know, maybe that image of him hugging Jesus up on his wall at home. I don't know. So there's him, you know, and Lauren Boebert. What more is there to say? I mean, she's like a high school dropout. She's a complete idiot. You know, she's vaccinated herself, but goes out on anti-vax rants. I mean, it's a collection of clowns. It's irresponsible. It's damaging to democracy, you know, and they don't care. None of them do. None of the ones that are supposed to be, you know, the adults in the room could care less.
You know, there were two different themes I saw coming out of CPAC, and it's interesting. I think, and I want to be careful how I say this, because I don't think we take this lightly in any capacity. But it's almost like the death throes of these movements, because they just seem to be lashing out so outrageously now. The first narrative they put out was this idea of revisiting the 1-6 insurrection and trying to paint this as something other than it was, an attempted overthrow of the government. And,
yes,
and whether that's Ashley Babbitt, who a traitor who got shot once again, breaking through a window of the U.S. House, trying to crawl through a window of a barricaded door to get at U.S. House members as they're in there, and was warned and then shot by security. That's a traitor. She basically was trying to assault the U.S. House and was shot.
Yes.
You know, but they're trying desperately to reframe her as some sort of patriot. They're trying to reframe these as innocent people. The reality is they can't. The problem they have is that they have all this evidence they themselves posted online, which pretty much wipes out their argument. But the people that go to CPAC, the people that like the Newsmax and the OAN, the reality doesn't matter. They just ignore all that and just say they were just a bunch of Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts having a picnic. And it really is kind of interesting to see their desperation to paint that as something other than it is.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote something about it in the Daily Beast, where I contributed here and there, probably about a week ago, kind of looking into their whole attempt to you know, turn this narrative around, right, and pretend that what didn't happen, you know, what happened there is not what happened. And again, it doesn't, you know, even if their argument is like, oh, it was never really a threat, you know, well, then it's just, well, then you failed at what you were doing, but you wanted it to be a threat.
Yeah.
You showed up with pipe bombs and guns and you punched, kicked, you know, stabbed and speared and anything else you could think of the Capitol Hill police officers who were trying to protect the Capitol. No wonder. I mean, Ashley Babbitt, who was a military member who committed actual treason, even more so than regular folks from the oath she took. I mean, yeah, she was, you know, it's a shame. I mean, it's horrible that anybody died, but she got shot because she was committing an act of treason.
Yes.
And these folks were protecting their lives and protecting the lives of the House members who were inside. And so they've kind of tried to do all of this turnaround also because, you know, they realize that their whole sort of narrative of how much they love cops, which is something I wrote about, which is they love cops except for they hate cops. You know, I mean, cops are like anybody else, which is disposable as soon as they're no good in their propaganda. You know, they love cops. If anybody, any cop is attacking somebody who's black, they love them. Any other time, you know, like what they were doing at the Capitol, they won't meet with this officer Fanon. They won't. So, I mean, they have to rewrite it because it harms them so grievously to show how callous they are, how much they hate the people that were trying to defend their lives, you know, who they claim to love. And so they have to sort of, you know, whistle past the graveyard. I hope nobody notices.
Well, and it is interesting. They were challenged. There were more than a few people at CPAC who did kind of challenge us. Like, how do you think this is good? I mean, this was an attack on the Capitol. Not everyone there was, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid. There were a few people, which if you're at CPAC and people are challenging that, I think that that's a sign. Like I said, when I go back to this idea that maybe this might be the death throes, I mean, these are the most ardent, hardcore conservatives. And if you're even getting pushback at your conference a little bit on this, it's telling me that maybe there is an element to this which is you know, going away a little bit. But the other side of it, and this is the one that is getting very interesting, I think, is there clearly is this attempt to say, oh, hell no, we are racist, white power from the right. And they can try to disguise it on Fox News and all these with their hosts as they try to say it, or when these Republicans come on out and say things, which are clearly the dog whistle stuff. But there is, I am starting to notice another pushback. The suburban white Republican voter, who generally works in a community with diversity, might even work with old people who are multicultural and stuff like that. So for them, the idea of racism, no, we're not going to go back down this path. We're not going to start burning crosses and wearing sheets. That's just not going to happen. But there is a concerted effort within the Republican Party saying, no, we are the party of the Klan. We adopted it in the 1960s when we brought in all the Dixiecrats. This is who we are, and we need to embrace this because we are going to have some sort of, I guess, uprising. But the reality is I think between those two things, this attempt by the Republicans to rebrand 1-6 and this new embracing of racism, just unabashed racism too, I think you are starting to get a lot of more than just the moderate Republicans like that guy from Illinois. It's you're starting to get into that core base saying, no, I'm a fiscal conservative. I'm not here for the racism. And it's really starting, I think, to push back. And I think that's where you saw that as well, a little bit at CPAC as well, too.
Yeah. I mean, you're seeing more of it at CPAC. I think it's growing in general and has been. Look, I mean, you say not just moderates. I mean, Liz Cheney is no moderate.
No.
You know, and the fact that they you know, she's been excommunicated from the party leadership, and certainly they're trying to defeat her. You're exactly right about this. They can't decide what to go with. Part of it's because Trump can't decide on any given day. You know, I mean, he can't decide what way is up on any given day. But they change it because you know what they really want to do is just go with their unabashed id, which is racist and sexist and xenophobic and anti-Semitic and, you know, and homophobic and all the rest. But at times they all realize that exactly as you're saying, they're hemorrhaging suburban white voters who even may be more conservative on a variety of things, but don't want this and realize the dangerous path this is going down. And so, you know, you'll see them try to rewrite it as, oh, you know, it was nothing. We didn't really do it to try to sort of keep suburban voters with them. You know, nothing really happened there. Oh, it was tourism, you know, that kind of garbage. And then the next minute you'd be like, that was a strike for white power. I mean, you'll hear some of the folks among their group. They had 3%ers there. They had Proud Boys there. These are terrorists. And they were allowed to openly just sort of show up and hang out at their, your former governor, I don't know if you saw that clip, Pawlenty, it was fun seeing him try to deny that and sort of say, well, the left has radicals too. And it was, what's her name on CNN? I can't think of her name. Oh, Brianna, is it Keller?
Yes.
And she sort of was like, well, then name me one conference where they've had actual terrorists walking among them.
And a former Democratic president showing up and people, an actual conference like this. And Pawlenty tries desperately to say, well, Black Lives Matter rallies are the same things. No, they're not. Not even close. And Pawlenty is, gosh, it's good to see him lost as ever in the fog. Yeah.
Right. Well, he was getting his butt kicked by her on that clip that I had watched online on CNN. I mean, so you know, he's making the attempt to be like, oh, you know, he's doing the whole thing to keep the suburbanites alive. I mean, I guess he would get in a way that some of the far right nuts from places like Alabama or whatever don't get. You know, in a state like Minnesota, you can't be a far right loon for the most part and win. You know, I mean, statewide, obviously, we all have our sections of our states. And that's the thing, is that if you go to their full in, if their full just open racism, what they would like to do, you know, with the exception of maybe about a dozen states, they'll lose everywhere. You know, they're already not helping matters by essentially killing off their own voters with COVID, because, you know, all these studies showing that essentially 99% plus of the people who are now dying from COVID are unvaccinated. Where do we think they're coming from?
Unbelievable.
You know, so, yeah, it's unbelievable. It's heartless and disgusting and whatever. It also is politically stupid, but they're doing it. So, you know, how many votes can they suppress? What can they get away with? You know, how much are they going to have to suppress to win? That's what it comes down to. And so some of them, like Pawlenty, cynically realize, like, we can't lose all suburban voters, because, again, he gets it. He had to win in a state where he had to win some suburban voters. But you see the hardcore Mo Brookses, you know, and types like that, or those who've only been in Congress and had districts drawn for them, like Jim Jordan, who don't care, you know, because they've got a different project entirely, you know. So, I mean, that's it. You're exactly right. That's the tension right now.
I will say, and going back to when we were talking about, you mentioned Boebert and getting vaccinated. How many of these Republicans have been vaccinated and openly tell everyone, don't worry about getting vaccinated, you make your own call? As you brought up, 99% of people who died in June of COVID, 99% were unvaccinated. I mean, it really is a death cult at this point.
Yeah, it is. You know, yeah. I mean, it was evil enough when they were okay with just anybody dying. That's bad enough. But you really do question it when you're like, you're okay with your own folks dying?
Your constituents,
I don't
yeah.
really get yeah. How is that good for you? I mean, the average person who watches Fox is like 112. You know, if they get COVID, they're not going to be in great shape. And yet Fox is basically telling its own viewers to go ahead and die. You know, and that's what the Republican Party, you know, at least some of the loudest voices in the Republican Party are doing the same thing. And the other ones who meekly speak up every once in a while, like McConnell, says, well, I don't understand why anybody wouldn't get vaccinated. Well, maybe that's because your whole stupid party is telling them not to, you know, or at least all the loudest voices in your party. So, I mean, none of this stuff fully makes sense. But again, like, we're in the grasp of the irrational at this point. It's not a political party. It's a cult. And there are enough people that either don't pay close attention, who still don't quite get what the Republican Party is, that they can win some of them. I mean, they still can win well above where they should be able to, which is what's frightening. But there's no core ideology anymore left, except for resentment and cruelty and racism. And I mean, it's all collapsed in on itself.
And then Trump today puts out a statement. And this ties those two narratives together, the idea of trying to rewrite what actually happened on 1-6 and then trying to basically embrace racism. His entire statement from the 1776, not 1619, you know, this is just where they're at. This is they're trying their hardest to brand this. The problem that I have, and can you think about this? I can't think of any time in our history of our country where we've had a failed attempt to overthrow the government where the former president then spends the next 10 months or so trying to basically convince people that, no, the overthrowing of the government attempt was the good thing, and learning that, oh my gosh, slavery was bad and the way the Native Americans were treated was horrible and we should make some acknowledgments in our history that these things actually happened. That's the actual real problem. I can't ever remember such a treasonous thing happening where it wasn't like there was Benedict Arnold defenders 10 months after Benedict Arnold was captured. We pretty much said, oh no, you're gonna try you. And that's what happens.
Well, I mean, you honestly have to go back to literally the biggest act of treason in this country's history, as far as I know, again, from history, which is Andrew Johnson. I mean, after not only did they rebel against the country, but they murdered President Lincoln. And you get the sort of the vice president comes in, who was picked as part of a unity ticket to try to keep this country together, from Tennessee and a supporter of the South, and didn't believe in the Union breaking up. But that was about it. Didn't believe in this, you know, came out against the Civil War. Otherwise, believe, you know, wanted the Black Codes passed and thought black slaves should be everything as close to being slaves again, almost chattel. you know, and have no rights and all. I mean, and so he spent a lot of time justifying, you know, what Southerners had done and trying to undo, you know, what the Civil War had done and what the passage of the 13th Amendment, for example, and others. So that's really, you know, I mean, it's not an exact parallel, but the last time I can think of in American history where you have a president who's apologizing for the people that committed this act of treason is Andrew Johnson. I mean, that's where you have to go to.
Yeah,
that just tells you how bad Donald Trump is.
There's another story, just really quick, I want to touch on this because it's just delicious. If you haven't been following this, Sidney Powell and Lindenwood, these are the two Kraken lawyer clowns. They're in Detroit right now. There's a hearings on whether they should be sanctioned going on for filing frivolous lawsuits to try to overthrow a legal election. So if you haven't paid attention, here's what's happened basically. Initially, they get in there, they basically point at each other and say, well, I didn't know what was in here. I didn't know what was in the lawsuit. I didn't know this. Then comes the idea that they basically go through the each individual allegation they make, and the judge points out, it's like there was a guy that said, I was perplexed by something. Well, there's no legal basis there to file the claim. And they ask on every one of these charges, did you do your due diligence and research to see if there was any basic merit to these cases? They both said no. They just they wanted to file a frivolous lawsuit and then do discovery, which is not how law works. They basically got exposed for not doing a basic Google search to show that Detroit did not vote over 100%, and they didn't do that. But what was pretty spectacular is at the end, I mean, and then of course they said only, you know, they did the only a fool would believe us. They basically kind of became, you know, belligerent at the end and said, no, we were right the entire time, and stormed out. The judge was not having anything of it, and it sounds like they're going to recommend that there's some pretty serious sanctions here when this is all over. But it has been delicious because, once again, once you get these people actually in a courtroom and they actually have to face a judge and actually have to defend this, it is just delightful to watch how ill-prepared. They didn't even bring their lawsuit, by the way. They didn't even bring their own lawsuit to their own trial. It's unbelievable.
I mean, you know, it makes you think of a few things. One, our system, right?
Yes.
I mean, Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, these people were once federal prosecutors. Anybody who was sent to prison by them, that should tell you enough about how much our system needed and still needs reform. That's part A. Part B is, you know, I mean, again, but the problem is this reminds you of sort of previous, you know, fascist movements, is they're not filled with intelligent people for the most part. They're filled with clowns. You know, they're filled with the people that demagogue because it's the only way they can get ahead, you know, either to make money or gain power, with the people that don't respect social norms or decency or anything, you know, and that's how they end up there, too, because they have a will to power and they just don't give a damn how they get there and what they do along the way. You never stop to think about that. My guess is there's all sorts of things that, you know, as a psychiatrist could sit there and pick out of sociopathy and narcissism and all sorts of other issues like that. I mean, but while it's delicious, and I agree with you, I'm so glad that it looks like they hopefully will be sanctioned. I mean, hopefully they'll take her law license. You know, at the same time, you sit here and you're sort of like, you know, these people are dangerous. They don't respect the norms the rest of us do. They don't respect the law. And they want nothing, you know, they don't stop in places where normal people say, this isn't worth it anymore. They're the ones that take it to the end, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why you can't treat them with kid gloves, you know, and that includes the Trump family. Like, you know, which I'm hoping in the Trump, you know, in their company lawsuit, among other things going on, where they're individually held responsible. Because if they're not, it just encourages more people. It already has. To behave like this because they feel like they can act with impunity almost. So,
yeah, I got to give you one last thing away from politics. You have the baseball take of the week already. You had it this morning at 9 a.m. when you emailed me this.
And,
oh, sweet God, I sprayed coffee all over my computer. Referring to the manager of the New York Yankees, Aaron Boone, you said, I could outmanage him while in a bucket of meth. And I said, well, you could, actually. I'm not going to disagree with that. I think you're right. We're at the All-Star break. You and my team are not doing too good right now. The Twins,
no.
Although the Twins just swept Detroit here because, my God, the Detroit bullpen's god-awful. But are your Yankees going to recover?
I don't know. It's amazing how quickly, like, you just feel like you're pulled back and forth. I mean, they found ways to lose to, you know, the Angels, the Mets, the and now the Astros in like the final innings, and just get and just the kinds of losses that just yank your heart out if you're a fan, which I'm sure you've dealt with there in Minnesota.
But they
need a lot of changes. This is what I would say. And I guess it comes down to, are they willing to spend the money? I mean, this team for a stadium like Yankee Stadium with a short porch in left field to, in right field, to be loaded up on righties the way they are. They have no balance with lefties, to kind of have all these big bulky guys and a lack of athleticism. I mean, there's just so many things. And, you know, when they're all playing out of their skulls, when DJ LeMahieu was winning a batting title, you know, and things like that, it kind of hid some of the problems with the team.
Yeah.
But the minute you have challenges or a few injuries, you know, then more, and they did have injuries last year, but I would say even some of the guys are playing more to, you know, not like out of their skulls. So I don't, it's just that simple, right? Yeah. The Yankees have resources in a way that most teams don't, but they're either going to use them or they're not making the playoffs.
Yesterday, ninth inning, our closer Rodgers goes in, bases empty, ninth inning, we're up by 3 runs. 10 pitches later, he gives up a grand slam. We did come back and win that game, though, unbelievable.
I give you credit on that. That's better than us. We couldn't put our closer in because he's given up like 47,000 earned runs, and he's still at the All-Star game somehow. Yes. And so we had a guy go in who was so gassed because he basically pitched the last 2 days and couldn't throw anymore. We had another pitcher who's on the COVID IL, you know, so we were screwed. We put in, and I mean, still though, there were ways to manage and try to manage around it that Aaron Boone didn't even attempt, seemingly. And I wasn't a Boone hater from the beginning, but my God, I mean, I've watched this disaster play again and again. When you're a team that's found a way to lose like 3 times in the ninth inning when you're up by 4 or 5 runs, you're doing some impressive work there.
Get our bucket of meth ready for Cliff. All right. Unprecedented is the podcast.
That's how I'd run the Republican Party.
Don Jr., yeah. Okay, so get the Unprecedented podcast. I'll link to that from Patreon a little bit later on. Blue Amp Strategies as well. Cliff, as always, you make my show better. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you for having me on, as always.